Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to another edition of Movie Moan, your TMT podcast. This is Jamie here with you as always. Joining me is the British gentleman agent, Mr. Phil G. Sello, sir.
Oh, go away, Jamie. I'm playing Super Mario Galaxy here. I mean, just go away. What are films, anyway? I don't know. Just leave me out of this. I'm just playing my Wii. Yeah, I know I'm like 2 or 3 years behind everybody else on this, but I got a Wii for my birthday, and I got both Super Mario Galaxies, and that's what I've been doing with my rare free time this week. Getting back into games, period, because I haven't really had time for them. And I find, I don't know about you guys, but I find most games these days, they're just designed to be too big. Like, they're all sandbox games these days, and it just, you have to give up your life to get into them, and I just can't do that. But it's a nice thing about a Mario game, you can always depend on it, you can just leap right in there and have some fun.
You can give that, tip your hat to Nintendo every time they do a brand new Mario game, a brand new Zelda game, and also Zelda, I mean, also a Metroid, they really, you know, go all out. I've never felt like, particularly with when they introduced it for their newest console, they never half-ass it, I feel. Maybe I'm wrong on that now, but...
I never half-ass it. I will say about a Zelda game, I just can't... I can't even pick one of those up, because I just know this... That is a full... That's a job! Playing a Zelda game, that's like a full-time job, just trying to get through that. It's huge. But anyway, the other guys who... very patiently waiting for us to shut up. Don't care about that stuff. So, introducing the fellow on my left, the host of the Ed Hocken Show on BrainDeadRadio.com, Captain Ed Hocken.
Yes, hello there. Thank you, as always, for the referring to my non-existent rank. And don't worry, folks, we'll definitely be having a new episode up very soon.
Good. So,
yes, just want to make that clear. I always let a good couple of weeks go by, so that way I have plenty of stuff to talk about. But joining us also, as always, is the man from the Great White North, Lou himself.
Greetings, everybody, and I just want to pipe in, Phil. I actually agree with you on your, because I do play video games, not as much as obviously as you younger guys, but I find the games today incredibly complex and long. Like I've got like a handful of games. It's probably going to take me 3 years to finish them, like Arkham Asylum and Half-Life, the Orange Box Collection, and
holy shit,
Uncharted 2, Dead Space, like all these games. Like, man, they take a long time for me. My 10-year-old son, he whizzes through them like in 3 days, and I'm just going, wow. But I guess I just try to enjoy the story as much as I can.
Word of advice there, if you're going to start with any one of them, start with Uncharted 2. It's
Yes, it is awesome. It would make a great Indiana Jones movie. Unfortunately, my PS3 died on me when I was like about halfway through the game. And
yeah, that actually happens. I had no idea that the PS3s also die, and they do.
Yes, they get the yellow light of death, which is quite annoying, and I've lost my save, so I'm going to have to play the game all over again, and it took me about a month to get to where I was. But it is an awesome game.
Do you still have the big, chunky PS3, or do you have a slimline one?
I picked up a slim. I have actually slimline versions of both systems now, Xbox and 360, and they are so quiet. This really feels like the consoles that should have been delivered on their inception dates, because they're both whisper quiet. It's just awesome. Actually, to play a game and not listen to the fan, you know, like I don't have to crank the volume to 11. I can play it at 9 now.
I find it doesn't matter how they package the Xbox, it just feels like this, it's fragile. It just feels fragile to me. Like, I'm just scared that if I bought...
It's like holding a newborn baby, you know?
Kind of. If a newborn baby needed an HD DVD drive attached to it to play movies.
I think babies should now come equipped with that, actually.
I agree. We've got to get some entertainment.
The new baby!
Well, they can be as cranky as babies at times, I'll tell you that.
Oh God damn it! This baby's not working!
Too hot. Get too hot.
Oh my God, my baby's got the yellow light on.
Yeah.
I don't know what any of this has to do with movies. Like, but anyway.
It was a slow week, that's why.
It was a slow week, folks.
It was slow, and I know I bitch about that every fucking week, but it really was this week. We got, like, not including the debate and the reviews, we got, like, 7 things to talk about, which, you know, we'll breeze through them relatively. Yeah, we'll take our time as we usually do, but Actually, I have to get to the review first. Phil, you saw a movie this week, finally open. What did you see, sir?
I saw the Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz film, Night and Day. Now, just so you know, folks, I was always going to see this movie. I was interested in seeing it. I liked the trailer. I was just expecting, you know, a cool action movie. I mean, I saw The A-Team, right? Sometimes all this little boy needs is a cool action movie. So I was interested in seeing it. Night and Day obviously underperformed in the States, as we all know. And I imagine there are a fair few people out there who are interested in seeing it, but they're deciding to wait for the DVD and make it a rental. I believe Mr. Jamie Williams here is one of those people. Am I right, sir?
If it played at my local theater, then yes. I think I went out of town to see something else, and I noticed they were playing Night and Day. Like, it was going to start 20 minutes after the other movie I saw ended, which it was Predators, actually. And I thought, well, you know, 20 minutes, I can go ahead and get a ticket for this. But I realized, nah, I'd rather go home. Yeah, I'll wait for the DVD.
That was cool. That's cool, dude. Well, I have two words for people like yourself who are interested in seeing it but haven't yet.
Uh-oh.
Don't bother. Do not bother. Tom Cruise has a line in this film which he says to one of the bad guys. He says, and I quote, "This is getting boring." He says it about an hour into the film. I was saying it about 5 minutes in. This film is vapor. It is tiresome dreck. With the exception of some very well shot action sequences, and I mean exactly that. I mean, they are well shot. We can actually see what's happening. We don't care about the characters, though. Tom Cruise is impervious to bullets, as usual. Car chases happen across entire cities, but they exist in this weird sort of vacuum where no innocent people are around to get caught in the crossfire. A single bullet hits a gas tank and the entire car shoots 50 feet into the air in a ball of flame. It feels like a film strangely lost in time. Like, it was almost like made 10 to 20 years ago and then was recently found in a vault and released, but the filmmakers have forgotten about it, and they'd also forgotten that we've been oversaturated by these types of action movies and spoofs and deconstructions as well, like Hot Fuzz, and we're tired of it. And we're just, this is, oh, I'm so tiring. And, you know, perhaps some of you have been wondering what the twist is in the film. You know, why exactly does Tom Cruise kidnap Cameron Diaz, of all people, and take her on this wacky adventure? There has to be some reason that he takes her along. I mean, because there always is in films like this. There's always some little twist. Nope. She literally is some random girl that he just takes along. We hear from the government agents that are chasing Cruise around that he's become mentally unstable and he needs to be taken out because he's a rogue agent. And I was wondering whether Cruise takes Diaz along simply because he talks to her at the airport and then on the plane, and he is losing his mind, but he likes this girl and she makes him feel normal. So he just takes her along selfishly, but takes her along so he can feel normal. That would have been interesting. Interesting is apparently not what they were going for in Night and Day. Cruise is on the run. You are going to fall asleep while I tell you this, guys. Cruise is on the run because he was protecting this child genius who has created a battery that never runs out, along with his partner, played by Peter Sarsgaard. Now, you're going to find this difficult to believe, guys, but
okay.
Sarsgaard is a douchebag.
Get out!
Yeah, I know, and he wants to sell the battery to evil crime lords.
I hope whatever studio executive thought to make Peter Sarsgaard the douchebag villain character should get a raise, because I have never seen that before.
The key to the city,
exactly.
A special achievement in Oscars. That's what they need for out of the box thinking. We're taking this too far. I apologize for my sarkiness, but I really don't know how else to say it. I mean. So, you know, Peter Sarsgaard is evil, and he wants to sell the battery to some evil crime lord in Spain. And incidentally, the guy who played the crime lord is the guy who played the villain in Bad Boys 2, if you remember that film. Jordi Mola, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce her, but I thought he was quite good in Bad Boys 2. He was very, very good. He's an extremely well-known actor in Spain, completely wasted here, and completely boring in this one as well, wasting his time. So anyway, Cruise runs off with the battery and with the child genius and is on the lam. That's it. That's the only reason. And, you know, Peter Sarsgaard makes up this excuse to his bosses that Cruise has gone insane. It's stupid. If you've seen the trailer, you've seen the film. Actually, now that I think about it, even if you haven't seen the trailer, you've seen the film. Because it's been done before. We've all seen this film. Cameron Diaz is Cameron Diaz in this film. Her character has no arc, no progression, nothing to do. Her chemistry with Cruz consists of them having the same conversation about 90 times. What did you do? You need to trust me. Who are you? They'll be coming soon, so we have to stick together. How did I get here? Get in the car, /plane/train. Why me? And this goes on again and again and again. As badly as Cruz and Diaz are wasted, though, Peter Sarsgaard just had me openly weeping in pity. Wasted is not a large enough word to cover what he is given to do in this piece of shit. We love the guy, no, especially after watching, you know, Shattered Glass and talking about that. We love Peter Sarsgaard. We think he's a very talented actor. He's done a lot of great stuff. I know he needs to pay the rent, but he needs to find better ways to do it. At least in Green Lantern, he gets to look interesting.
He's got the cum catcher in that.
Cum catcher mustache and a swollen head. At least that'll be cool. Speaking of which, an equally talented actor, Paul Dano, is in this film as well as the child genius who invents the battery. He's still playing children.
Future and, Oscar winner, Paul Dano. Let's go ahead and just get that out of the way.
Well, not in this. I'll tell you what, man. If I could place a bet on that and that turned out to be true, oh, man, I'd be rolling in the dough. I could buy 10 Xbox 360s and never have to worry about them breaking. Now I could buy a billion. Anyway, he has a stash in this, but it doesn't save him. It's just, it's very rare that I say this, guys, but this film should never have been made. It is so out of date, you can't even take the risk of eating it. I did eat it, and now I've been diagnosed with a desperately low tolerance of shitty summer movies. I can't take this anymore. The summer's practically over now. We've still got Expendables and Scott Pilgrim to go. But, God, this has been a bad one.
It's been a pretty shitty summer. It has been. A couple of high points, but not many.
How was your weekend then, Jamie? What did you see?
I saw The Other Guys, and I must say, it was the opposite end of the spectrum. I really liked it. Thought it was very funny. It was first thought that came to my mind was it was another notch on the Adam McKay, Will Ferrell belt. They've done four films now, I think. The only one I really didn't like was Talladega Nights. I did not find that one particularly funny. Apparently, that's a big favorite of that fan base. I mean, what can I say? It was good action. It really, I have to quote Devin Faraci, I'm paraphrasing, over at Chud when he said, this was everything that Cop Out wasn't. This accomplished all those goals, to do a movie that sort of, I don't want to say lampooned, but it certainly did a send-up of the, you know, buddy cop, you know, mid-late 80s, early 90s genre. Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg had good chemistry. They're both funny. I mean, there's plenty of random what-the-fuck kind of moments that you're sort of used to with Adam McKay films. Plenty of lines. I don't want to give them away. I mean, I was kind of disappointed that no one else saw it this weekend because I was hoping to have a good conversation about it. But I would just say go check it out. Did really well this weekend, which is good, so it's going to be another hit for them. I would say it's obviously not better than Anchorman. That's the untouchable one. I would say it's back and forth for the number two of their second best collaboration between that and Step Brothers. But right now, I'd say this was better than Step Brothers.
What is the best comedy you've seen this year, Jamie?
Oh, this year? Oh man, what comedy?
It just suddenly occurred to me.
What comedies came out this year?
Exactly. Yeah.
That were worth a damn. I don't remember that many comedies that I saw. I mean, like, I don't. Nothing comes to mind. I saw Get Him to the Greek, but I thought that was awful.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you. I got backup on this. I remember that now. Yeah, but that's about it, though. I don't really have much else to add.
The same Prince of Persia, then. That was the best comedy we saw this year.
Oh, I see.
It was just depressing. Yeah, see what I did there. Anyway.
Are
we moving on, then?
Sure.
Oh, sir. Things are not happy in the Marvel camp. Well, they never are they?
It never has been.
Seems to have this remarkable talent for burning down bridges. First of all, we had Terrence Howard last year, we've had Edward Norton, and now we can add Jon Favreau to the list, although, as Jamie will now point out, we kind of suspected this for a while. That's your cue, Jamie.
Well, I mean, it just, you know, how should I put this? I mean, yeah, I mean, Marvel's just, you know, a report came out from Cinema Blend, said that the working relationship between the two of them had been really rocky. I mean, you guys remember 2 years ago there was that public really bad situation where they were trying to negotiate a deal for Favreau to direct the Iron Man sequel, which they immediately announced. Like the Monday after Iron Man opened, like $100 million, they announced a sequel, and they had no deal set with anybody, really, except for Downey, it seems. Like, Downey was locked down. I think Gwyneth Paltrow was locked down. Everyone else was kind of up in the air. Favreau wanted to direct Avengers. Things got so bad with the negotiations on Iron Man 2 that they basically said, we're not working with this guy again. He's not directing another movie with us. It's kind of sad because you think about it, you go, you know, without Iron Man, that was the movie that kind of kick-started this current boom that Marvel's going through. But it's funny how, like, it's kind of slowly but surely chipping away. Because for a while, you heard all the nerds and fanboys go, like, well, Marvel's doing everything right. Why can't DC do it like them? And you realize, no, Marvel's not. I never thought Marvel was doing it right. They were rushing into this without, you know, they didn't have their eggs carefully hatched before they started making these announcements and plans. They just started saying, okay, this is coming out then, this is coming out then, this is coming out then. And it's starting to backfire. I mean, the whole Ed Norton thing, as I've said, you know, that's people are having revisionist history on how Ed Norton was being a little bitch about it. But that doesn't excuse how Marvel reacted. Terrence Howard, you know, they certainly handled it a little bit more privately.
But also, Jamie, I mean, just I'm not concerned about the money because, yeah, I can totally understand Marvel's viewpoint from there that these movies will cost the Earth, and it's selfish for us to tell them how to spend their money. So if people are asking like $10 million a piece and are like Jon Favreau and they're not willing to pay it because, you know, this is a movie that's going to have like 12 main characters and some big name actors here, then totally understand that. What I object to is that they are fucking up the quality. I'm going to be
they
doing
already did.
This,
they already yeah, did with exactly. Iron Man 2. I mean, like, look what happened with that. They
not just that, with Hulk. I'm sorry, I will debate this with anybody. Hulk was not the Incredible Hulk, I mean, was not the movie it should have been. They cut so much out of it. I am on, as far as the actual debate about the integrity of the film, I'm on Norton's side of the fence. Mm-hmm.
I think Incredible Hulk was fine for what it was. I thought it was a fun, tight action movie. The problem with the Norton argument, I find, is that Marvel, well, not really Marvel, it was more Universal, they already tried this idea of going for a very character-driven Hulk movie. It's called Ang Lee's Hulk. It didn't work out. So they said, you know what, we're going to prevent that from happening again. So in that case, you go, did you not see what happened with that other movie? It didn't work out. You know, if that's me pretending to be Marvel talking to Louis Leterrier and Ed Norton, it's like, did you see what happened? Yeah, people hated it. We're going to make a Hulk movie that kicks ass. That's what people wanted the first time around. So I side with Marvel in that regard.
I mean, Ed, we'll go over to you. What do you think about this?
What, about Favreau not talking to Marvel?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, these, you know.
You haven't seen Iron Man 2, have you?
What now?
You haven't seen Iron Man 2, have you?
I haven't seen Iron Man 2. So, but I'm just thinking, you're talking about Marvel rushing into things. I mean, that's a problem there, but it is the trade-off of that they want to get an Avengers movie done fast, you know, but then they're not going to have the relationships to pull, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, but damn, I don't really have much to say other than...
It's no problem.
Yeah, you got me all, I'm having a W moment. You better get, go to Lou for a
moment. And cue!
And cue. Well, I think this is, we're seeing the tip of the iceberg here, and I'm going to take a shot in the dark or make a prediction that the next kerfuffle is going to happen with Joss Whedon, because he's a pretty dynamic personality too, and this is what happens when you have a corporation that has a overall vision for not just the individual projects that each of these creative people are working on, but they're trying to shape a product line, and they want to fit each individual egg into one basket, and that one basket is the Avengers movie. And they did it before with Daredevil. I mean, there's a director's cut of that movie that's far superior than a theatrical release that's been that was done, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They have a brand, and if you're not in line with that, then the Ed Nortons and the Jon Favreaus, they're gonna get discarded, and they're gonna put somebody else in their place, which is why I'm really surprised that Joss Whedon got the Avengers movie, because he's had a history of conflicts with any project that he's been on. So I'm just waiting for the first shot to go over the bow with him, and I think it'll be very interesting to see what the life story of the Avengers movie is going to turn out to be.
Well, I just want to say, Lou, if they're really trying to go for the overall brand here, why even bother going with directors that may be having trouble and just get a lot of hired
guns? Fanboys. For the fanboys.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, you know what that means, guys, is Brett Ratner is going to show up. So
he's got to hit cleanup sooner or later.
Brett Ratner's power pack, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely right with Whedon. It was for nerd cred, but it's kind of pointless. I mean, the masses aren't going to give a shit who's directing Avengers. They're going to see Iron Man, and they're going to see these two other characters who they may or may not wind up loving. I mean, that will be determined a year from now.
Well, that's what I wanted to bring up, Jamie, is the fact that this piece of news is starting to make me actively terrified about Thor and Captain America, spinning off from what we were talking about last week, that, you
right.
know, what, we, you know, why do, it's incredibly short-sighted in Marvel, why do people love Iron Man 1? They love it, well, for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons I maintain is because it's a self-contained movie. It works all by itself. We can pretend Iron Man 2 never existed, and
well,
some
Downey,
people might
that's
like to. Exactly. And
was
that's
Downey was the reason that movie worked. I mean, people like movies with flawed human heroes who bleed, who get their asses kicked, who have to, you know, that's why everyone loves the Indiana Jones. I mean, particularly Raiders, it was so refreshing. And the Craig Bond is human. Now, he got his ass kicked plenty of times in those two movies. That's why, because his Tony Stark was very human. You know, he had a drinking problem. He was arrogant. He slept around. He was selling, you know, weapons to terrorists. But he, you know, had a change of heart.
But it works all by itself. I mean, there is, when I'm watching Thor and Captain America, and to be honest, this is a flaw which has been present since the beginning, there's no doubt about how both those movies are going to end. You know exactly. I mean, obviously, Thor's going to be banished, but he's going to have his, you can see it now, he's going to have his name.
Well, obviously.
He's going to have a choice between going back to Asgard or going back on Earth and joining Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Gee, I wonder what he's going to do. Captain America.
It'll be like the ending to that Hercules cartoon. You know, that's what, I'm calling it right now, that's what it'll be, Phil.
But without the gospel choir. Well,
yes.
Who knows, actually? Who knows what Branagh has planned? We'll wait and see.
That's the twist.
Oh, gee, don't sing. Okay, and and Captain America, I'm not going to complain about this, really, because it's true to the comics that obviously he gets frozen, suspended animation, and ends up in present day and gets arrested by the Avengers. But if that's going to happen at the end of Captain America, that's going to make it a bit of a weird ending, really, and it's not going to really make it work as a self-contained movie, and that's the problem with Iron Man 2. And just getting back to Incredible Hulk, I saw, you know, you watched the DVD, they were generous enough at least to include the scenes that they cut out for the most part. I see the movie that Norton was fighting for. I see a movie that had heart, that had actual character development in it, that had actors like the guy who plays Doc Samson, I've forgotten his name, Ty Burrell, there you go, and, you know, who completely cut out of the film. They're sacrificing the individual films for the quality of the individual films for this end goal. It's not going to work, especially, like you were saying, Jamie, if we don't like Thor and Captain America, because we're not going to get excited about it. And, yeah, they are going to retitle it Iron Man and the Avengers, and it's pissing me off. It's really, really pissing me off. And DC is, in the long run, I think, if this strategy works off, if this Superman movie happens and it's kick-ass, and obviously Batman 3... I'm hoping Batman 3 doesn't suck. We never know, never assume it's going to be great just because Nolan is doing it. And Green Lantern, I'm open-minded about it.
I'm optimistic about Batman 3 and Man of Steel. Not so much Green Lantern. I just think it's a silly concept.
My only hope about that is that Martin Campbell is directing it and he kicks ass when you give him a good script. That's the only thing.
Actually rewatching Zorro this weekend and I remember what you said. I was like, absolutely right. You look at that first Zorro movie, it's great. You look at the second one.
Did you see the second one?
I've not seen the second one. I saw the trailer for the second one, and I said, no, thank you.
Yeah, second one sucks.
It does.
First one still holds up. It's great. You know, great score. Everything about that first, I was about to say that first Hulk, that first Zorro works.
Yeah.
But that's getting back to what we're talking about. One of the reasons that movie works, it's self-contained. It's got a kind of timeless feel to it. It's not like we're setting up how Zorro became Zorro. We're not setting up he's going to join a bunch of superheroes later on. I don't know where I'm going with this. Best move on.
The cracks are starting to show in the Marvel showcase. The people are starting to see what's going on.
Yeah.
It turned out to be right. I mean, they're making the money off, obviously, off the individual movies, but...
Well, they have with Iron Man. you know.
Yeah, but is it going to be? Is it going to start to be a law of diminishing returns because they're trying to push individual pieces to fit into a bigger part?
And now they're pimping 3D for this crap. It's like Iron Man 2 did not need 3D. Yeah. They didn't 3D. Need 3D to make $300 million. Granted, it still made less than the first one domestically, which was very telling. I thought shocking actually. But you know. Thor and Captain America in 3D. Avengers will no doubt be in 3D.
I wish they would just stop making that announcement that this movie is going to be released in 3D. It's like, who cares?
I think we might start. And this is off the top of my head. We might start a section called "No Shit Sherlock: The 3D Announcements."
Yeah, you know,
just add one into a link wherever they got it.
Yeah, like it's like now it's like saying this movie's gonna have a surround sound soundtrack when you go.
It'll be in widescreen.
It'll be in widescreen. Like we don't need to know this anymore. We don't really care.
When are they gonna bring back CinemaScope? No.
Yeah, or sensor round.
There you go.
Or heaven forbid, Spectravision. That's for a hotel room, actually.
Yeah. So. Okay, moving on. We've talked about Marvel because Marvel gets, you know, they get too much press. So there's a really cool, I thought a very cool rumor hit this week. Our buddies over at Poppy, God damn it, I got to ask Dustin Rawls how to pronounce that. He's the guy who runs the website. One of these days I'll figure out how to pronounce it. But no, they posted a rumor that Quentin Tarantino is attached to direct and co-write an update of The Shadow.
It seems pretty random.
That is very random, but the thing about it is, so is Tarantino.
And Tarantino attaches himself to a lot of projects.
He does.
This has been going on for years.
Yes, he has. But here's the thing, and tell me if I'm wrong. I actually have more faith in. And granted, like even they were saying, like we're not 100% sure this is going to end up happening. Fair enough. But it's like it's not coming from Tarantino's big mouth, and I love the guy, but he talks too much. As you just said, Ed, he attaches himself to so many fucking movies. He says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and then he doesn't do it, and then he just loses interest and moves on. I mean, you know, what happened to the Vega brothers? I mean, some people are still talking like that movie's ever going to happen.
People still keep wondering if there's ever going to be the full single cut of Kill Bill.
Yeah, and that's never happening. And, you know.
Well, no, wait. I mean, the thing still hasn't had a Blu-ray release. So it is on the cards.
Okay, well, there you go.
That's the excuse. It is an excuse, but it is going to happen.
Okay, we'll see. I'm just saying. But Shadow, why not? I just say why not. I mean, like, I don't know if it'll happen. I doubt it, but. And what do you guys think? The Shadow? I mean,
I think that's a property that's time has come and gone. Like that's a real rooted in the radio place type of storytelling. And is it going to be a period piece? Is he going to try to update it to modern times? If he updates it to modern times,
it'll be the Green Hornet.
It just won't work.
Bruchaw is the Shadow.
Yeah. It's just not a character that you can bring into the 21st century and. Expect the audiences to latch onto it like the other present day superheroes. So, I really don't see the reason for why anybody wants to do this project. It's time has come and gone.
Sorry to cut you off there, Lou, but yeah, it's incredibly random that if all things Tarantino is assigned to this, you know, really, I mean,
Tarantino should make a Punisher or something like that if he wants to make a superhero movie.
Yeah, since Marvel's so hell bent on making that fucking character.
That would be a if they're going to remake it again, that seems something his alley than Punch the Shadow.
The funny thing is, if he did a Punisher movie, there'd be there'd be very few scenes of violence. It'd be horrific violence, but there'd be a lot of talking going on.
Then he should do Deadpool, the merc with a mouth, you know,
yeah, right.
A hero who doesn't shut up, a lot of violence, you know, why not?
yeah, that's another good choice.
So anyway. Let's see what else I have. Now, I felt this was the shocking news of the week, and Phil, I think you're going to back me up on this one, buddy, is news came out this week that, I think it was The Rap broke it, that Steven Sommers is actually going to direct the G.I. Joe sequel. Now, for one, I didn't think they were going to do a G.I. Joe sequel. I loved it.
It didn't make any money in the thing. Did it pay off?
It made it back.
It did okay. It did like 300 worldwide, and it's like it did about 150 a pop, like domestic and then international.
If you subscribe to the theory that a movie has to make three times its budget to make a profit, then I don't think it made a profit. What the hell do I know about economics?
Well, I mean, it's just like the whole story about, you know, there was a story that came out maybe May or June before it opened, saying that he had been fired from the movie and they locked him out of the editing room in post-production on G.I. Joe, and then I guess they let him back in or something. The whole thing is still...
He saw Steve Norrington in the hall, still muttering to himself, "Ah, bastard Connery! Lock me in."
Yes.
Sorry, that's an old joke. So that's a Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen joke. Apparently, Steve Norrington, the director, got kicked out of the editing room.
Connery cut the movie, yes.
By Sean Connery, no less. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And Connery, yeah, notice he has not done a movie since, except for that CG fucking flutter.
Don't go there. We are not going there. That one hurts. That really hurts.
That hurt you personally.
We need to provide a link to that in the show notes, because I don't think if you don't know what we're talking about,
they know what we're talking about. It's pretty terrible, you know.
Wow, G.I. Joe budget $170 million gross U.S. Yeah.
Probably more like $200 million. I imagine that was a $200 million budget. I'd be shocked.
They did not look it either.
Well, no, it was. I liked it. It was very stupid, but I found that appealing and charming. A lot of people didn't, and I can't argue against that. But for those that did love it, like me, I think if you did another one, it's not like you can suddenly do a sequel like, well, we're going to really get into character development in the sequel. No, you're making a G.I. Joe movie. It's stupid and loud. You're just going to do more of the same. And the problem is that if you do more of the same, people are going to start, who defended it the first time, are going to go, well, they didn't try to do anything else new this time. It's a lose-lose. I find that it's going to lose its charm the second time around.
Well, yeah. Being that person who defended it the first time around...
And God bless you, because I had someone with me.
Yes, well, there you go. I tell you what, I mean, I have said this before, but the only reason I'd want to see a sequel is for the sadistic pleasure of seeing them completely go just completely insane and make a horrible horror movie that's just so, so stupid, as we all know who've seen it. Cobra Commander and Destro as the villains, who I assume will be back for this one.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is probably trying every fiber in his being to get out of that damn contract for G.I. Joe 2. Oh yeah, they're all under contract. They've got like sequel options. All of them do.
Oh shit.
Yeah, so it's like
that poor guy. Oh my god.
He's gonna be like, look, I'll do anything else, man. Anything else.
I'll do Fantastic Four Reborn. I'll play Reed Richards. That's not a bad idea, actually. He can play Reed Richards.
Charlton Copley would be Reed Richards.
That's a weird choice.
Thank you.
I guess I'm not with it at the moment, but I could... No, I can't see that, but okay, fair enough.
I tried.
I'm really boggling that movie cost $170 million.
It was a strike shoot, though. That was another thing.
It does not... The money is not on the screen. Not so
I think it is, but I'm in the minority.
It's so CGI-ish. Oh, yeah.
Just because the effects are terrible, it doesn't mean that they didn't pay a lot for them. I'm just saying, I think it's on
they've got receipts. You know, yeah, they paid
I understand that. I'm just saying the quality doesn't reflect what they paid for. That's
touché.
Not at all.
Like, you look at District 9, which costs...
nothing.
A fifth of what... G.I. Joe cost.
Well, that's the money into, like, you know, paying for the effects. That was every penny was put into paying the effects. Everyone else got like a free meal or something to appear in District 9.
Think about it this way. I think I've got a theory about it, actually, Jamie. I'm just thinking about this. Obviously, film itself, the film you put in the camera, costs money, and shooting time costs money. I imagine with any other actor in a special effects movie, it would take a couple of takes to get a line done. I think with Channing Tatum, it probably takes about 50 to 100 takes, and that's all the money went, you know?
Why didn't they get Mark Wahlberg to play Duke? I mean, as I said...
That was a rumor.
I'll continue to say...
He turned it down, I think.
Oh, wow.
I could have sworn I read that he turned it down. He's like, nah, I can't do this shit. What's happening? Great.
This movie was made in 1998. It would have been Mark Wahlberg as Duke.
And it still would have been directed by Stephen Sommers.
Yeah. Yes.
I have a feeling that Hasbro must have collected quite a royalty check on this movie, and that's part of the budget here, because I'm sorry, I don't see that money on the screen at all. And I don't know what production issues they had, but that's ridiculous. For that kind of money? I mean, come on.
But like I said, I'm just surprised they're doing it, because it didn't do that awesome theatrically. It did okay, but I know they hired the Zombieland writers, and hey, they seem like a fine fit for it, because I like Zombieland. But I just thought like it would be one of those cases where they hired a writer, they got a couple of drafts, and they said, eh.
Hey, I'm sorry I'm going a little off script here, but did you guys see that story item about George Lucas has put his Star Wars TV series on the shelf because it's too expensive?
I heard about that, and it's not surprising because, I mean,
yeah, like, they're gonna do. He's just realizing this now? Like, I'm going, hello?
Might be the diabetes.
Well, to be fair, dude, the guy is giving half his fortune to charity, so he hasn't got the money
anymore.
His
kids are pissed probably about that, too. Ugh. Thanks, Dad.
Oh, come on, Jamie. You can't.
Well, I'm sure he has plenty of money left over. He never bought a new shirt.
That's actually true, and he never paid for anyone to shave his beard either. So
he never paid anyone to shave his beard. He never got he never bought the iodine necessary to get rid of that goiter. So as a billionaire, he never got that fixed.
Well, he spends his off time being a lumberjack, as we all know. So when that Star Wars stuff doesn't work out,
yeah. Well, that seems like a strange reason for him to show up. I mean, how he didn't know it was going to be expensive before.
Well, it was going to be. Now, correct me on this, Lou. They had sold 100 episodes to the syndication market right then and there. Is that right?
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's like you're just now, as you said, they're realizing this now. I mean, come on, dude.
How much did your movies cost? Like, if you're going to build even a piece of that universe on a TV series, like.
Yep. I
think the money was going to come.
It reminds me of what happened with Amazing Stories. I mean, you guys remember that anthology show that Spielberg produced. I mean, NBC basically bought, like, he made a pit. I'm paraphrasing the story, but, you know, he pitched the idea. He wanted to do a weekly anthology show. They said, great, we'll do it. We'll buy it. Because your name is Steven Spielberg, and he had just done, you know, Raiders and E.T., and it was like the guy had turned into the, you know, a brand name with those two movies. He was officially, you know, Steven Spielberg. And they basically bought two full seasons off a pitch.
Yep.
And they were expensive shows, and they hyped it up, and the first couple episodes did huge, but then people just lost their interest, and they were stuck with, you know, another 2 years' worth of a contract to produce all these really expensive shows that no one cared about. So I wonder if it was the same situation. Someone's like, do you guys remember what Spielberg did 25 years ago? We don't want that shit to happen again.
You know, just on a side note about that, I mean, if that's where Lucas is coming from, then it's probably a good thing. Well, actually, this goes without saying, really, doesn't it? But Lucas at the moment, or for the last 10, 15 years, has had a different vision of Star Wars than the rest of us. I mean, when he sees Star Wars, he sees cartoon characters, armies of them, you know, fighting each other with lasers constantly for an hour. When I think of Star Wars, honestly, when I think of Star Wars, the first thing I think about is Han and Luke and Obi-Wan and Chewie in the Millennium Falcon cockpit. It's just a set. There's no real money on the scene. It's just a little set, and then rocking about on a gimbal, and because you love the characters and there's great dialogue, you're into it. Empire Strikes Back, I know that cost the Earth when they made it, but you look at it now, it's surprisingly small scale. Apart from the whole Battle of Hoth thing,
most of
it is characters in tight little spaces, you know, talking.
But that was the intention.
Exactly.
Okay.
So why? I know a great Star Wars television show is financially viable. You just got to get your priorities right. You've got to create compelling characters. You've got to get great scripts and just build some sets and have it set on some rickety spaceships.
Well, the other thing is it's this other thing about Lucas. He wants to connect every dot possible without using your imagination. Hey, how come Obi-Wan comes back as a ghost from the Force? Oh, here's why. Well, I don't need to know that. Let me use my imagination, goddammit. And, like, this show would have been set right after Revenge of the Sith, but right before A New Hope, which is about 18 years. Well, yeah, it is 18 years. So you go, I don't need to see how the Rebellion formed and shit like that, seeing, like, a CGI, you know, Yoda bullshitting with Jimmy Smith. So I don't care about that crap. Just, no. We should form a rebellion, we should. I don't care about that crap. Let's just use your imagination and let the fans do their stupid fan fiction crap. I don't care.
Yeah, it's strange, though, that he put all that work into it and just realized that now. But just saying.
Well, let's get that Willow reboot up and running. How about that instead?
Yeah. I hate you.
What?
That's not cool. Willow sucks.
It does suck. Willow is great for one scene. It's when, like, the Witress transforms all the heroes into pigs, which must have been an amazing pitch from Lucas. Like, yeah, so they turn into pigs, and they're just like, the executives are looking at him like, why pigs? Like that scene is disturbing to me. I still don't get the logic. Like, yeah, there you go, pigs.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want the Willow Blu-ray with the Jamie Williams commentary track. There you go. Pigs. That's what I want.
Little Kevin Pollock. You know, what?
Lenny and Iggy from Laverne and Shirley.
Exactly. Yeah, great idea, guys. Anyway, moving away from the pigs for a second here. So we mentioned Spielberg earlier. Apparently, Liam Neeson will no longer be Abraham Lincoln. He had been attached to that for how long? I feel like 5 years or something. It's been a while.
God, even longer. Like, yeah. Since before time began, he's been attached to that thing.
That's true, actually. I can't reply to that.
Sorry.
That's fine. No, but yeah, so he was... Well, everyone seemed to be like Tom Hanks or somebody playing Abraham Lincoln, which wouldn't have been a terrible choice, but that would have been actually quite good. But now Liam Neeson was attached. Sally Field was going to play Mrs. Lincoln, and Tony Kushner was writing the script. And apparently he has done a script. I don't know how many drafts. And just it's... not happening. At least it's not happening under Liam Neeson. He came out and said he is no longer involved with it. He's gotten too old. He said his expiration date has lapsed, I think is what he exactly said.
Now he's going to start lobbying for playing Gandalf.
Well, true, actually, because he needs to play the mentor figure some more. He hasn't played
that
enough.
That's right.
He's going to try to, like, begging Christopher Nolan, like, please let me be in Batman 3. No. What do you guys think? No Liam Neeson. No. Thanks, guys. Later.
I'm just being polite here. I'm letting that respond.
No. It's a shame that this never has taken off, that we've never had a good, you know, Lincoln has never been, you know, this biopic has been talked about for years, and it's like, I don't know why Spielberg's always put this on the back burner. This is the type of thing that's been begging for a new movie, and we've never gotten it.
But God forbid we got 10-10, so don't worry.
Yeah, I know. Talking about misplaced priorities.
I wonder, though.
I mean, we haven't had someone.
Go ahead.
Lou, you had something?
Go ahead, Ed. Oh, I was just gonna say, wondering.
I was just saying, so far.
Is it me?
No, what about it?
I'm going to moderate this. Lou, you go first.
Okay. I'm just wondering if Spielberg et al. Are starting to realize that, and maybe this is just a sign of what's going in the cinema, is that these types of stories just won't fly in the theater anymore. I think these things are better suited for TV miniseries now, like on cable with what was the one that Paul Giamatti just did?
John Adams.
Yeah, like I think that's maybe where this type of story is going to be seen in the future. I don't think it's going to be in the theaters anymore.
I don't know, but if anyone's going to do something like this, it's Spielberg. I mean, there's still, I mean, he could have done this. It's the same thing of like shooting on film. Like Spielberg, he can afford to do that, so he does it. He still cuts on film. He will always cut on film. Most of the filmmakers aren't going to do that because it's just not financially viable. You got to shoot with video, HD, and stuff like that. Tarantino's the same way. He only works on film because he loves that stuff.
I do not want to see the assassination of Abraham Lincoln in fucking digital video. Fuck that shit.
Michael Mann's. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, then Lincoln? Oh, that would have been glorious.
Yeah. Then I guess the project is set with Spielberg so long that he's lost the initial enthusiasm for it.
Yeah, I mean, he's attached to so many movies that most of them we'll never see. I'm just curious what he does beyond 10-10. Like his next – oh, yeah, that's right. We know he's doing War Horse for next summer, which, hey, I heard the play is great. I don't know if you've seen it, Phil.
No, sir.
Okay. I'm just asking. It's in London, so I assumed you saw it.
We just see plays. No, we don't have – televisions or games or things. We just watch plays.
Exactly.
And drink tea.
There's a tea time, an intermission, you know.
Yes, I'm going to have to go now. I'm sorry. I'll let you take it over. It's only sad because, I mean, I thought, I could be wrong, but I thought that obviously we all agreed that Liam Neeson was born to play this part, at least physically. I mean, from a...
He's not... Well, the difference is he's not an ugly man. He's actually a very handsome man. Lincoln was butt ugly. So you have to find another butt ugly actor who could play him.
In the eye of the beholder, but fair enough.
I'm just saying.
I would have loved to have gone to your history class, Jamie.
How bad is it that the best cinema portrayal of Lincoln we've got now is from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Oh, no.
That's the only thing he's got.
I like the one from the Star Trek original, the Savage Curtain, there on the Molten Planet. That was a good one, too.
Top that, Spielberg. He tried.
Who's right? I think maybe this would have been better as an HBO or miniseries. Although I personally enjoy biographies that are about a specific time. I had heard this movie was to be about the last 2 years of his life.
Yes.
So, which would have been a lot of material to cover.
As I told Phil off air, it's like now that we're trying to find a Lincoln, I think we have the man. He's played every other living and dead figure in the world. Michael Sheen is Abraham Lincoln.
That'd be a very tiny Lincoln.
Camera angles, my friend. Camera angles. I have two words. Angus Scrim. Enough said.
Apple box.
Oh, that's it. Apple box.
Actually, no. While you were saying that, I'm thinking about this, and I don't know if any of you have the actual data to back this up, but do biopic films make money? Really? I mean, do they make profit?
I don't.
Because I really don't.
It went Oscars. Does that count?
Yeah, they went Oscars. Yeah.
This probably is going to cost a fortune to make, no matter what.
More money just to make it, and then do the prints and ads, and then you do additional the Oscar campaign. So you're probably spending more money than anything else. When you barely earn, you don't earn anything basically.
I mean, who really goes out and watches them? Who really says, "Oh, I can't wait to see this"? I mean, I know we
us
do, but that's,
old people.
Yeah.
Okay, but who else? I mean, really, I just don't.
Older
think...
people. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I say it's better suited for TV. I mean, I would love to see, and maybe there is one that I don't know about. I'd love to see like a biography of Albert Einstein. But is there one out there? I've never heard of one. But
there was that
only,
movie.
Only
IQ.
Walter Matthau.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there is young Einstein. I mean, I don't know how historically accurate that was, but
I don't think it's historically accurate.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Ed. What? It wasn't.
Ladies and gentlemen, our new section of the show, I bet you didn't know.
I mean, maybe this is a good debate topic maybe for another show about what's viable in the theater going forward, because I think the choices are getting limited.
Brand names are what's viable. Sequels. Yeah, like, comic books.
Yeah.
Cartoons.
Maybe that's something we should talk about in another show. But
I've written it down there.
There you go. Anything with a brand name is now considered. I'm looking forward to Ritz Crackers the movie. Like, that will be a very delicious movie.
It's officially the Mr. Show had that classic skit about Coupon the movie.
I didn't hear that. That's a good one.
Oh, God.
It's a great sketch, too. So,
a Louis Leterrier film.
Yes. You know, David Lynch's Tampax, the movie. You know, shit like that. Who else would make that movie? Maybe Werner Herzog, maybe. But that's, I'm thinking more Lynch.
That sounds more of a Todd Solondz kind of project, really.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Fuck me.
Roman Polanski's Oreo. Dip your finger in its moist and inviting hole. Sorry, that was a
movie
terrible answer.
Wow. Yeah, good night, folks. We're going to see you next week at the movies.
Hi from IT. So anyway, over to Lou for the next item. Ridley Scott might actually be directing something good.
Well, after what we just talked about, I'm almost kind of wondering if a movie of this type would ever get made anymore. Rumored that he might be working on a 1974 science fiction novel written by Joel Haldeman, who was a Vietnam War veteran, and it's called The Forever War, and it's about a war that basically takes over a time span of several centuries, because it's a movie that he based on scientific fact that about faster and light travel not being possible, so the soldiers are in suspended animation between battles, and it follows one soldier who... basically goes through a war that on Earth lasts hundreds of years, but for him only lasts between 5 or 10. And it's kind of, it would fall like an Apocalypse Now, All Quiet on the Western Front type of scenario where, and maybe even something like The Clockwork Orange where it looks, and Starship Troopers where it's looking at how, at the bureaucracy, or the craziness of the bureaucracy of war, and the fact that what you've gone to fight for back home, by the time you get back home, obviously for him it was the Vietnam War, by the time he came back to the States, had changed so dramatically in those few years. But imagine over a time span of a couple of hundred years that the people that you're fighting for are more alien to you than the actual enemies that you were fighting with. So this is a high concept movie, but it could be very dense, and it could be like an Apocalypse Now. Like there's so many, it's such a heavy movie that I'm almost wondering if it would even get made anymore. But I would be very excited to see a project like this being made.
I mean, really, Scott has so many other movies he wants to make before he expires. So I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't say that meanly. It's true. I mean, he's attached to so many big movies, and studios are still writing him blank checks. It seems like.
And this would not have to be an expensive movie, though. I mean, some of the battle scenes, yeah, but a lot of it's takes place in pretty pedestrian. Like, you can make it almost like a submarine movie, kind of, in a way. Because his moments when he's back home, you could restrict to certain sets and that. So I don't think it'd be an outrageously expensive movie, but it would definitely be an interesting one.
I would love to see it compared to something like, say, Alien prequel.
Yeah, exactly.
I would like to see this movie compared to, like, Apocalypse Now or All Quiet on the Western Front. I mean, it's just an examination of, the ultimate craziness that war usually turns out to be. So,
I just want to see him do science fiction again. I mean, like Jamie was saying, I don't want to see him return to Alien. I want to see him do a pure science fiction story, either an original one or based on a book. What was the one, Lou? We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, the one that you wanted to see.
Childhood's End?
Childhood's End, there you go.
Yeah.
Something like that. That's what I want to see. It is amazing to me, actually, just thinking now about it, how I keep giving Ridley Scott chances. His track record is so patchy, man, but it's not like
it is.
Where I've completely given up. It's like I'm still with you, Ridley. I'm still holding out hope that you can still, because you can do
because we have the excuse, though, of like Kingdom of Heaven, where the theatrical version was just terrible, and then his actual cut of the movie is brilliant.
He should make a decision to himself, or that I'm not going to make any more medieval time period movies and look at some other time periods.
He loves that period. He uses the word exotic. He loves that word.
The problem we've got, Lou, is unfortunately Ridley Scott himself, and look, I want to clarify, this is just the impression that I get reading interviews with him. Ridley Scott is a cocky motherfucker, and he doesn't think his shit stinks. He actually thinks every movie he makes, he's happy with every movie he makes, which great for him, but he needs to. He's kind of like got a bit of the Shamhammer virus there, where he doesn't actually realize that we don't like his stuff, I think. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, wrapping up before our debate, Phil actually had an item he wanted to discuss, because we all get one pick this week. Sir, what did you want to talk about?
We don't usually do this on Movie Moan, folks. We don't usually talk about recently deceased people in the filmmaking profession. But this one I did want to talk about because maybe some of you out there don't actually know who Tom Mankiewicz is, who sadly died this week of cancer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Mankiewicz is, well, basically, obviously being British, I am a Bond fan. I'm a huge Bond nut. Secondly, Superman the movie is my favorite movie. So what have I told you? That's the
writer.
The rewrite man on Superman the movie and on Superman 2 partially. Not going to go into that whole story, but the confidant to Richard Donner on the first two Superman films. The person who really nailed the spirit, the tone, the snappy dialogue, and was also a writer on Diamonds Are Forever, Live and Let Die, The Man with the Golden Gun, and secretly, Jamie told me this, I didn't even know, also helped out uncredited on Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker.
Oh, yeah. He admits that. There's interviews where he said he definitely did huge rewrites on that.
And if you think about it, even in a weak Bond film like Man with the Golden Gun, there's like a killer line where Roger Moore has this sort of rifle pointed at this gun, this armament dealer's testicles, and he says, "So speak now or forever hold your peace." That's Mankiewicz in a nutshell. This man that he wrote larger than life, and he was just a great, great writer.
Good storyteller.
And a good storyteller.
Well, and the sense, like, not just as a writer, like, telling a story, but, like, he told stories about working in the industry. you know, because he'd go to Q&As, and he'd tell people, like, what happened, because it's like, whatever, man, what's it matter? That was years ago. I can tell you everything. And he did that with a lot of these. He confirmed, actually, that Roger Moore, the urban legend about Roger Moore, like, was going to be the original James Bond. He said, no, that's true. Like, he said, Roger still has the contract. It's signed. Yeah. Like, he was going to be James Bond. That's a fact. And other stuff like that, working on Superman and, you know, how they offered. The one thing I always wanted to hear was, like, they've always said that had everything gone according to plan with Superman 2 working out, they would have taken a break, and then Mankiewicz would have directed Superman 3. And they had already had, like, two other movies lined up. Him and Donner just, like, you know, torpedoed a couple of ideas together back and forth, and that they had a Superman 3 and 4 right then and there. And I would
it's
love
agonizing.
To have known. And the sad thing is, Donner doesn't remember. Like, you know, they've asked a few times, do you remember? He goes, I honestly don't remember what we were going to do. He said that was so many years ago. And, of course, yeah. Mankiewicz, no one ever asked him, I don't think. And he has such a good memory, you'd think he would have known, and now we'll never know.
I don't
and
think
I
anything was
ever. And one last thing here. You yes. can't forget that he also directed the hit comedy smash Dragnet.
Yes.
Amen.
Oh, no.
Maybe Dan Aykroyd's best performance.
I would actually concur with you, Jamie. I completely agree with you. I completely
thank
agree.
You.
I'm
so,
sorry, I had it's to not just in there and twist it, but you can't forget the 1987 Dragnet movie.
I was moving on to it. Don't worry, Sam. I was going to get to it. I was going to say, since he didn't direct Superman 3 or 4, he did make Dragnet instead. So in some ways, things worked out for Ed. Yes, I still would have preferred Superman 3 and 4 with Mank, but you know, to each his own. But I also. Tom Mankiewicz was not just, he didn't just get into the industry by himself. The man came from, well, he was born into the industry,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, he was.
One of my, actually, my favorite documentary of all time about the making of a film
is Cleopatra.
The Cleopatra documentary. If you ever want to know how fucking hard it is to make films, watch that documentary. It is worth buying the Cleopatra special edition.
Watch that and watch Hearts of Darkness. That and Hearts of Darkness.
Amen. It's worth it. I hate the film. I hate Cleopatra, but it was worth buying it just for that documentary. Obviously, his father, Joseph Mankiewicz, who directed it, is no longer with us. So Tom Mankiewicz is a great presence on the documentary. And
his cousin, is Ben Mankiewicz, if I remember correctly.
Correct. Yes.
Who to this day I will defend and say, you know, he did a good job on At the Movies. It was just the other one that was the problem. Only they had gotten someone other than him. Next to Ben Mankiewicz, but alas.
Tom. It should have been Tom.
It should have been Tom. There you go. Well,
that would have been such a great. So, I mean, we don't know Tom personally, and we're not going to bore you with such bullshit like we really, you know, what a huge loss, and he means a lot to us dearly. It's just that, you know.
Seemed like a good guy.
He was a great guy. He's been a great contribution in so many of the documentaries that I've grown up watching over the last decade or so when DVDs came out, and he was a major contribution of some of my favorite films growing up and my favorite film of all time. So how can I not say that I'm going to miss this guy? And obviously he was retired, so he wasn't in the field anymore, but it's a great loss anytime, because as usual, writers do not get their dues. So many writers do not get their dues. Or exposure. I don't even think this death has been really that reported on. I heard about it because, you know, we knew about it. I actually found out first through Jamie's Twitter feed, and then I found out about it subsequently, because I guess he's watching CommanderBond.net like a whore.
I just noticed it on there, Commander Bond. And they were the first one to get it out, and it was 24 hours later until everyone else caught on to it, which happens.
Anytime we lose a great talent, a great writer, it's a loss. And there aren't many writers today that write like Mankiewicz, in my opinion, and that's too bad.
I concur. So
let's move on, and we'll close with a word of prayer. No, we won't. So let's move on to this week's debate, folks. This one's going to be a little bit tighter, I think, than last week. Last week was fantastic because it snowballed into so many different things. This week we've got a very focused thing to talk about, and it is this. Why do movie posters suck these days? They just suck. I am not talking about this from a nostalgia perspective that everything was better in the 80s. It's not the case. What we're
but it
talking
was.
About... Well, it was. Yeah, that's true. But what we're talking about here is a key word that I'm going to bring up again and again in this conversation, and that is effort. the effort is not being made these days. All movie posters just look identical, like depending on what genre they're in. If you get a cool science fiction action movie, they all pretty much look like I did love the Spider-Man 2 posters and the Dark Knight posters were good, and I'm liking the Tron Legacy posters, but they all basically the same, you know. There's no real effort. Oh, I don't want to say effort, but they do look identical. Nothing's blowing me away. I'm not seeing iconic imagery anymore.
I don't like the one sheets where they basically put in it. I know it's the teaser one sheets where they put the logo and then the release date, like summer 2000, so and so. I just don't like that. That doesn't get me excited because it's like, eh, whatever. You know, they did that with so many other – they still do that. I mean, they did that with Star Trek, and they got their heads out of their asses and realized, like, wait, we can't promote this movie like that.
Now, I think the reason – and before I just open this up, I think that the reason is obviously the effort doesn't have to be made anymore because thanks to the internet, there is much greater exposure of marketing campaigns, of trailers. Everyone gets to see the trailer just with a click of the button. So you don't need to make the effort into making an eye-catching poster in the theater lobby. But they still make them out of obligation. And I'm wondering if they're going to make horrible, horrible posters, which I see in the theater lobby. Why even bother releasing a poster in the first place? If it's just obligation and not a proper marketing tool, what's the point? So we're going to start the debate, and we'll start with Captain N. Hocken. Why do movie posters suck?
I think Jamie had said, you know, you have the internet, so the way marketing is done these days is irrevocably changed. I think also just there's this laziness. Posters aren't, you know, they're not painted anymore. It's all through Photoshop, and a lot of the stuff is just done on the cheap, and as I said, it's laziness. And then the other thing is, like, because it's Photoshop, anyone can make their own poster. So I think that's just how it is. I just don't – there's just other ways of doing the marketing, and studios just want to pursue that rather than focus on the posters, which makes sense because a poster only goes up in the theater or, say, a bus shelter. So you gotta go through other means. And I think just the way a poster is able to portray and project certain things, it just can't be done through other mediums. It's kind of like the – I may have mentioned this last week. I'm not sure. It's like the old album cover of the LPs. That stuff cannot be translated to what a CD looks like, and it certainly can't be transferred to what an MP3 file looks like. So, but I said this last week. Vinyl is still around, so there's always going to be that market. I think posters are going to be around because there's always, you know, there is that quality that just can't be replicated. And the great posters are, you know, it's almost like, you know, they are works of art, and they will always be around. And even like for really crappy movies, there's a certain eras you can always see through the poster where there's like a lot of text or anything like that. So I think they'll always be around. I think there'll always be good ones. You said the Dark Knight. Dark Knight had some really great posters, some really inventive posters. And I think for the people that are going to want to put the effort in, it's always going to be there. But for others, it's just, you know, it's like the DVD cover box. It's like no one puts any money into that, and I could, you know.
Which annoys me. It's like, you know, some of these movies, the great posters, and they just do the head. Yeah, I don't care about that. I mean, like the Gone Baby Gone poster. Great. I thought the best movie 2007. A really good poster. Like, set a mood. When you see, like, you know, Casey Affleck's back looking down, it set a certain mood. And they get the DVD, and it's basically that. But that's kind of, like, minuscule because you want to see a giant head of Casey Affleck, Morgan Freeman, Amy Ryan, Ed Harris. Who else? Someone else was in the cover whose name escapes me. But you get the idea what I'm saying.
I'm thinking of, like, the poster for something like Old Dogs with Robin Williams and John Travolta.
That movie is terrible.
Yeah, well, even better, Jamie, the Little Fockers poster this week.
Yes, where if you actually take, yeah, where you have, you know, one side you have Robert De Niro, whatever, and then you have, you know, Ben Stiller. If you take if you actually, instead of having them face off, you have them to one another's backs, you have the Brokeback Mountain poster.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that.
Better idea.
Throwback Fockers, you know.
Well, what about you, Lou? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a very interesting phenomenon because for me, movie posters were till the advent of like photoshopping and whatnot, as has been mentioned, were works of art. And the movie companies hired artists like Drew Struzan, who is probably my favorite poster artist of all time.
Amen.
To do these posters. And the problem is, I think somebody looked at one of his posters and said, oh, he puts everybody that's in the movie more often than not in the poster. I can do that on the computer with some taking some pictures. So then it moved from, you know, from being a piece of art just to floating head posters. And basically that's what all we're getting now. And it would almost be like saying, oh, I don't need to hire a composer anymore for a movie. I'll just get something composed on a computer and use that instead. I mean, there's just movie posters have just become kind of dumped in with movie companies' media strategy for promoting pictures. So it's sort of become like a lost, you know, it's kind of like the loss of the old standalone cinemas moving into the to the mall. So it's just unfortunately, it's a sad thing that I think it's just one of those corners that's been cut, and now we're just getting these generic posters that are just really like labels on food packaging. Really, they're not art anymore.
I mean, what was the last great one sheet from a recent movie you guys can remember? I can't remember any.
No. Oh, jeez.
Just said Dark Knight with the blood smile on the glass.
That was a good one. No, that was a good one, actually, that Ledger one. I agree with that there. But is that the most recent
one? I'm trying to think of something, you know, iconic. Like, when was the last time we saw a poster? When you say the title of the film, the poster is what you think of, like Jurassic Park or E.T.
Batman is what I think of when you say that.
The Hellboys poster.
There's that, and I would also say Moon.
Yeah, that's a good one. That is a very good one.
It was good, yeah.
I mean, I love, I don't know, like this is going to TV, but I love the Walking Dead poster that Struzan's done for the upcoming AMC TV series.
Did he do the Chuck poster?
He did the Chuck poster.
That's
another good one. He did the ones for Titanic. But you see, we're going back pre-Photoshop time period with a lot of this stuff, right? But
that's okay.
Yeah, but I think the ones for Hellboy were pretty good.
Is it just a loss of talent, then?
It's around. It's whether they're going to use it or not.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I noticed that the people who still do Struzan are the ones that, you know, it's are a little bit more involved with the marketing and whatnot. You know, like Guillermo del Toro and Frank Darabont, they love the guy. They understand Dylan. Yeah, Nolan. I mean, like they get people who are artists to come up with these great images and whatnot. The Pixar posters aren't bad; they're pretty good. That Wall-E one, that was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pixar does good posters.
I mean, but that's not many. I mean, I liked the other guy's poster. Kind of generic, but like, you know, Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg like apparently flying while they're shooting guns, just so over the top and silly. But I thought it was a relatively amusing poster. There's not many of those.
You know what I'm really noticing, though? It's not just that we've been talking about modern movies here, but I'm also noticing, and this is what's really pissing me off, a complete rejection by the studios of those classic painted posters that were produced for classic films when they're being released today on DVD and Blu-ray. Like, they will not, just for example, Bond. The Bond posters, the Bond-painted posters for all of those movies are some of the best I've ever seen, and for some reason, they will not put those on the DVDs when they release them, and they've released them again and again and again. They keep coming up with the images they've got for the new releases of the Bond movies, the ones that are in stores at the moment, are pathetic. It's just
the Bond guy
and the Bond girl. And it's so like, oh my God, how is that going to catch anyone's eye? How is anybody going to pick that up? Like, it seems like those painted posters are just seen as a thing of nostalgia. When Star Wars and Indiana Jones are released on Blu-ray, are we going to see those beautiful Juice Doosan posters on the cover? I doubt it. I don't think so. I think we're going to see, you want that, you got to buy the Laserdisc, because the people who put Laserdisc together, they know you appreciate that stuff. It's just a complete rejection of this art form in all forms at the moment.
Uh-oh.
No, he's there.
Is he?
Better be.
I'm not hearing him.
But he, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
Sorry, where did you lose me?
You were going on there, sir.
You just said it's not there anymore.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's a rejection of this art form completely in all shapes, movies of old and movies today, and it's really annoying me.
Is it just as simple as the people see most of their media on smaller physical format? Is that what it's really come down to? Is just because it's on a CD now instead of on a, like you said, like an LD album cover? Or, I mean, nobody sees posters at the, like at the Cineplex, they're all kind of like usually in a row along the hallway as you're walking to your theaters. But like in the older theaters, like the standalone theaters, it was a big deal to see all the posters outside before going into the theater, like in the lobby.
And they go inside, and it's like huge marquees, like huge across the. I mean, just
Which
I think one of those.
I think it is a loss of talent though, as well, because one of the obviously quintessential ingredients of a movie poster is not just the art; it's the tagline. And when was the last time we saw a really good tagline? They don't try anymore. And it really, really, really bothers me when, especially with some of the blockbusters, that we just get just taglines.
The last really great tagline I can honestly say was from the Siskel and Ebert movie. Two thumbs up, Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah.
That was the last good
one. No. Nothing beats movie with air. Oh, that's just the title, but movie with air conditioning.
I still want to see that movie. What would the Siskel and Ebert movie be? I just want to know.
I think that's a topic for next week, so we'll pretty much... you know what
finally would have Finally would have had that death match.
Oh, who you pay some money on then?
Absolutely, Ebert. Don't bet against the fat man.
Okay. You know what? I don't know what to say, dude. we'll talk about it next week. But you know what I'm talking about? I mean, when your movie is called Clash of the Titans, and your tagline is Titans Will Clash, I'm saying, who's getting paid for this? This is not funny. This isn't funny, Lou. Someone's getting paid for this, and it's pissing me off. It's just when it's that lazy, when it's that blatant. I mean, actually, the worst one, I'll tell you what, the worst one that I've ever seen, the worst one ever was my subject this week for Marveling at the Past, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. Do you know what the tagline was for that movie?
No.
Rise.
Actually, I have to take that back. I just remembered a really good one coming up from the upcoming Yogi Bear movie saying, great things come in bears.
I hate you. I'm trying to have an intelligent debate here and you bring fucking Yogi Bear.
You know, if you people have seen the one sheet, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, that is a hell of a line for a movie.
I would, you know what is funny? Our good friend Christina can't be here tonight, but I promised her. I said, we don't have much to talk about, but I promise you at least Yogi Bear will not be one of the things we mention. And, of course, that turned out. That turned out to be a promise.
How can we not bring up that phrase? I mean, come on.
I'm trying to forget it. That's I guess you're dying to see it. That's
oh, cool. Absolutely. You can't imagine how badly I can't hold back watching that Yogi Bear movie. As in the Yogi Bear movie in my head, then yeah, I can't wait to see that movie. With Alec Baldwin and Rip Torn and a psychotic bear, yes. But I don't think that's the movie they made.
Would you guys consider the Scott Pilgrim poster distinctive? I think that one stands out.
I think it's okay. I like it. You mean the one with
the guitar? Line,
although
right.
Epic of epicness. It's okay.
Yeah. I like the poster, though. It's different.
I like that. It's not Photoshop. I mean, it looks like someone actually painted a poster. So, yeah. God bless
him. Yeah. I mean, the movie made no money, but I'm sure you remember the wonderful painted Aqua Teen Hunger Force, the movie poster. It was a beautiful piece of art, I thought. I'd never seen the show, but that caught my eye.
Don't see the show.
It was incredibly tacky. That was the point of it, though.
Yeah, It's true, though, but it's just one of those things where I feel like it is worth spending money to get talented people to do these things because...
You know, I do like the Social Network poster. It just came to my mind, and their phrase is pretty great, actually. You know, you don't make 500 million friends without making a few enemies. Great tagline.
And you make me think of the Truman Show, for example.
That's a good one.
Stunning poster that was. I mean, folks, please send us comments about this one. What do you like? What's the kind of poster that really hits the marks? And also, I'd love to know from you folks, what's the worst poster you've ever seen? If you need some inspiration, there's a wonderful site you can go to. I'm going to give him a plug, which is called impawards.com. That's internetmovieposterawards.com. Every year they have awards about the best and worst posters, and you just click on there. You'll be
They've
able to see
got tons of one shoots.
Everything.
Far as the eyes can see. Yeah, it's pretty great.
Back to the 60s, I think.
Pretty much. If we're gonna, as we wrap up the show, I will plug a website. Trailers from Hell. I don't know if you guys have been there yet. Great stuff.
I still need to go there, dude.
You need to go there. That's some good stuff. You get, like, filmmakers give commentary over trailers to older movies. That's great stuff. John Landis gives, like, commentary over the Citizen Kane trailer. And whatnot. There's a obscure references. Like there's a commentary for William Friedkin's Sorcerer trailer, which I love that trailer. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it.
Trailer's great. This is what I gotta see.
Yeah, oh, it's really good. Like Knight Riders, Romero's forgotten little classic. That has a commentary over it. The trailer. I'm like, wow, that's just, you know, good shit, man. So please go to Trailers from Hell. Great fucking site. I wasted many hours when I first saw that website online, looking up, listening to commentaries, because I have no life.
There's your tagline, folks. Movie Trailers from Hell. It's good shit, man. Thumbs up from Jamie. There you go.
There you go.
So that's it for tonight, folks. Just want to give a shout out to our faithful commenters. That is A to the H and Wealth. Welsh film buffs, and also I haven't done it in a couple of weeks, and I do apologise about that. But I do want to mention our good next door neighbours, crashinghollywood.com. What the fuck am I talking about? Sorry. They will be eventually. They'll have their own website eventually, maybe. But our next door neighbour podcast, crashinghollywood.com. Mm-hmm. Go check them out after you've listened to us. But do listen to us. Be courteous. Take us home, Jamie.
I can't really top that now. Hey, guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week at the movies. Have a good one. Take care.
Have a good one. If your head should fall.